listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake Up Hollywood, this is your host with the most, Nikki Kolula. We have some fun, amazing, talented guests with us tonight. Mr. David Seitz and Jesse Davidson. Did I get the names correctly?
Yes, you did.
Yep.
Wow, the last names, I knew it's Jesse and David, but I was like, did I get the last names right?
No, you did. You absolutely nailed it. Well done, sir.
Start the landing, bro.
You know what? What's so funny is when I was a guest on your podcast, I think you guys both had masks on. So it's good to see the other halves of your faces.
Yeah.
Did we do that like that?
Yeah. I think I did for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
I was being cautious. But likewise, man. It's good to see you again.
Likewise. Yeah. What have you guys been up to? I know you've been touring with Lita Ford a little bit.
Yeah, I've been doing some Tekken, and that's been the latest gig that I've gotten. And that was supposed to sort of kick off beginning of 2020, like around March or so. And then, of course, you know, all of that got put on hold. And so now, you know, that things are opening up, I've been going out on the road with them and handling drums for that band. And my buddy Jared Woznick handles the guitars and backline for everybody else. So
that's amazing. That's got to be a fun little gig, man. You're playing some cool theaters and arenas and you have good gear. I assume you have a good crew.
Oh, the crew's great. And, you know, the band, I love that whole outfit. And it's really interesting because we do clubs and we'll do festivals. We'll do, you know, all sorts of gigs, you know, really. And it's you get a wide variety of you know, different environments you can work in, different areas of the country. Like in a couple of days, I'll be going out to Vegas and we're playing the Golden Nugget on Friday. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Right. So it's you know, it's a fun gig, man. I really enjoy it. So yeah, that's been the biggest thing, I think, along with you know, finished tracking some stuff with my band Rogue, and then also I think we've got two singles coming out. Not exactly sure when, but they're right at the end of the mixing stage, and then we're getting into the mastering stage. So
that's all the fun stuff. When all the tracking's done, I'm always like, whew, now it's just finding levels and getting it all finished, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So pretty much my life in a nutshell now is when I'm not working on the stage, you know, I'm playing on it, so which is a good place for me to be.
That's awesome. And David, what have you been up to, man?
Gigs.
I got gigs. That's a good feeling.
It went from 0 to 100, Nick. It's crazy, man. It's I got all different types of bands calling right now, and it's nice. It's nice to be working and looking at the money. Like I don't need to take this one, but I'll take this one too.
Yeah, there's a new appreciation for sure for all gigs. I just got called for a corporate party, and usually I don't love corporate party gigs, but you know, it's like, all right, yeah, man. I'm just excited to play. It's like I've never been more excited just to play. So it's a very strange time because I think all musicians just appreciate, you know, it's kind of like we said all our Hail Marys because we're like, we won't be bad again, I promise. And like, we'll definitely just make sure we do everything right. I'll value every gig. I'll never talk shit.
Yeah, yep. Fingers crossed. Yeah.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. You just remember that like 6 years, 10 years into it because it's so easy to be like, oh man, I gotta load my gear, or oh man, I gotta wake up at 6 in the morning, whatever it is, you know. It's like I feel your pain. That's awesome that you guys are working and getting back into the flow. Was it weird to just jump right back in?
Well, I'll let you go first because I think...
refuse.
Oh, okay. All right.
This is how we do over here.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. It's been weird, not in the sense that playing has felt weird, because that felt like, you know, riding a bike, you know, I guess is the old cliche saying, is that dirty. Like, you know, aside from the, you know, shaking a little bit of the rust off, it was like, that felt like we had just stopped playing yesterday. Or the same thing, you know, with like the band gigs, or like I took I filled in for you actually for doing a private party. And that was the same thing. The playing in front of people didn't feel weird. The teching, I think, felt a little bit more weird because that's more mechanical and less creative. So it's just remembering all the steps and the little nuances that, you know, your artist wants, and knowing that, oh, yeah, this is the preference on how they have things set. So that was more weird than the playing part of it. As far as the gigs themselves, just being around people in general, I think, felt a little bit odd, especially when we were touring. We were going in, you know, to other parts of the country where they were, you know, just basically like they've been kind of open the whole time and, you know, no mask. And they're just kind of, you know, going about things kind of as normal. And so coming from California, that's a little bit of a culture shock. But, you know, again, like, you know, being as cautious as you can and, you know, people really nice and friendly and I think really appreciative about having live music again. So it was just kind of, you know, it was a little bit of everything, man. It was fun, challenging, you know, just all of the above, basically.
Nice.
What about you, David?
Yeah, I mean, no, getting back and playing the usual, like, you know, clubs and stuff and cover bands and corporate band stuff I've been doing, that just felt like, yes, thank you. That was just like hopping back in the water. But I did go to a concert with our engineer Max on Friday, and that felt pretty different because I think, again, like Jesse was saying, that bigger crowd factor definitely made an impression on me. It was like stressful, like anxiety-inducing to go there.
Yeah.
And only once I got there and realized, like, oh, you know what? It was a pretty small show, and it was, like, the right crowd because of the bands I liked and what have you. So it was, like, pretty cool. But there was a variation as far as, like, masks and all that kind of stuff. It's, like, people right in front of us. It was, like, real close seating, and a lot of people, like, kept their mask on the whole time, and a lot of people just took it off and were screaming. I was like, well, they're screaming on me right now, so might as well just, you know, dip in and enjoy myself, too. So.
Yeah.
Well, it's definitely weird to like I just went to a comedy club last night and, you know, you're right next to you're sitting, you know, arm to arm next to everybody. So like that was new for me, just being that close to so many people in one place. But like I'm still so skeptical about everything. So I just kept my mask on because I'm like, I'm just going to keep everything as normal because I don't want to get this. Like I just don't want to get it. I don't want to experience it. Anybody else can tell the tale of their experience with COVID, but I'm like, yo, I don't want this. I don't want any part of this. I'm going to make sure I do everything I can. So yeah. The hand sanitizer is close. The mask is closer. And let's just hope it all works out always. But yeah, man, I feel the exact same. It's like very odd to I think, experience live music on any level again because it's been a year and a half. I mean, that's how – I just went to my first concert – and it was a year and a half. It was like, my God, I couldn't believe how loud it was. And it felt so great. And usually I wear earplugs. I'm like,
yeah.
I'm wearing earplugs. I want to feel the intensity of how I always love that intensity to be, you know? So it was, and the concert was Guns N' Roses. So you knew it had to be somebody big kick down the door, which was awesome.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I saw your posts actually from that, and it looked really cool. And I've been seeing other friends getting tickets to that in other parts of the country, and like, yeah, that's a good way to come back to live gigs. I think that's a pretty big one.
And they're an LA band, and my girlfriend hadn't seen them before, and I'd seen them, but we're playing Summerfest. They're playing, I think, 3 or 4 days after us. So I'm like, you know what? I may never see them ever again. So I'm gonna see them. This is gonna be the second. And the first time I saw them was at Coachella. And Axl Rose he had broke his ankle. So he was sitting on the Dave Grohl's throne. I don't know if you ever saw pictures of that, but Dave Grohl gave him the guitar king, like Game of Thrones throne.
Yeah. To
so he was just sitting down. I'm like, how can I see Axl Rose never do his sway, which he didn't really do his sway that much, you know, in the new lineup, but it was good to see him standing and just dancing around. Running around, you know, it's cool to see that. But man, Slash stole the show. It was just like the most insane. So let me ask you guys this. You guys have both been seasoned musicians and veterans in the business for so long, and you started this amazing podcast. Tell me Sonic City Council. Tell me how it came about, why it came about, and, you know, who are some of the other people that you've had on your show?
Well, I blame Davey for how this came about.
Totally
pretty much. All the blame rests on Davey. It was, I think, around August last year, summer, I'd say. That's a safe
Yeah,
bet,
it was
right?
August. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not usually good with dates.
Though. Yeah. yeah. So around that time, you know, with just being at home for about, you know, 6 months at that point, somewhere around in there, both of us were just, you know, starting to FaceTime more just with, you know, trying to stay social when you can't actually get together. And, he had talked about wanting to do like a local music kind of a show, you know, to begin with. And he'd brought up that idea in the past. And I've been, you know, always busy with, you know, traveling stuff and working and never really had time to do it. And so once COVID hit and then we started talking, we realized, well, hey, how about we get that podcast local music show idea together? And by this point, I've been kind of teching for a few years and doing more LA gigs. So I had like a good roster of LA musicians that I've known and befriended, along with like really talented local musicians here in the high desert. For those that don't know, we're broadcasting from Lancaster, California, up about an hour north of LA.
That's and Poppy so, Central, man.
It is. That's Poppy, a Poppy. Yeah, Poppy Reserve, man. And so between really talented local friends of ours and buddies of mine from LA, we were thinking, well, how about we turn it into more of like a podcast that we would watch, you know, where you can get like any sort of guests on and get people from all over the place. And as well as we've had people that I've met on tour from, you know, Nashville, Oklahoma, people that were recommended to us by friends of mine. So we've had a great engineer from New York named Jess Fenton on. And it was really just trying to make a big hangout, you know. That was, I think, the origin of it.
Yeah, more or less.
Yeah.
I was like, definitely, I started bugging him about this because JSC, he's been a columnist in the local newspaper for a couple of years now. And he has a weekly interview segment that he does with artists of all sorts that are usually like resident or featured in the Antelope Valley. And, you know, I would read it and I'd always be like, man, my dude asked like the right kind of questions. Like, I was like, I'm such an interview show junkie. Like, I still like to this day, like to watch like, you know, old Letterman, old Dick Cavett, because I love interviews and just the
me
process
too.
Of, yeah, you know, I love Elvis Mitchell is one of the best on KCRW. And so I felt like this cat's in the same vein. And I was like, look, we could do something with that. But he was actually super legit busy and I wasn't. And then the pandemic happened and then I was busy but homebound, and this poor cat lost the gigs that he had lined up, all these really nice gigs that he's doing now.
Yeah.
So happy ending. But he was like, he was going from like 60 to whoop. So he went, he went from fast to furious. And so I was like,
no, you're doing this industry too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, you were feeling it too. I mean, you were moving at a certain pace with your band and stuff. Like,
man, I still haven't played my first gig. That's what's so crazy.
Is Summerfest your first
gig? Summerfest is my first gig. And
woo-hoo!
We have another one the week after, the month after. And it's crazy because just the endurance level of just, you know, playing a gig, I'm not there. You know, it's like, I know I'm like, man, I need to do something like jumping rope or just like playing. And just because like there's a physical part of this industry that I know you guys both know.
Yeah.
And you know, when it stops like it did, you lose the mental kind of like acumen, I guess, to like stay focused and busy and motivated and inspired, but you also lose that physical kind of prowess as well, just to kind of maintain that level of energy. So I think that's why anybody would sink, you know. Jesse, I felt the same thing. Like, I was getting antsy. So I love that you turned it into a podcast and you're like using local talent and connections and people, you know, kind of like create this medium, because it's what's needed. Honestly, when I was on your show as a guest, I was telling my family this, and I was like, you know, these guys did their homework. Like, they knew their stuff. They knew my bio. They knew the music, the influences. Like, those are the kind of interviews I only want to do, to be honest. It's like, you know, because you have the people that do their homework. And it was refreshing to see that, because I've been on so many shows where they don't. And they're just like some producers chalking into an earpiece and saying, ask them about this. And the person that's asking you the question doesn't even know why they're asking you that question. And when you give them an answer, they're just bullshitting as to why they asked you that question. So it was refreshing to be on your show and to kind of like see the platform. Now, how do you see, you know, some of the obstacles in what you're doing? Is it having people come to the studio?
Mostly, I would say it's changed though over the course of the podcast for sure. At first, we were really, I feel like, trying to find our footing and really identify with ourselves on screen and get comfortable with that kind of stuff. And then we worked into a phase where it was the pandemic got worse in terms of like the you know, the percentages going up of cases, unfortunately. So then we were redacted to our houses again, and then the tech component was a problem for a while.
Yeah,
or the stressor.
Yeah,
but now it's just booking us being available to meet in a room. This is the first time we've been able to meet in a while.
Yeah,
so that's the biggest problem right now, I'd say. What do you think?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, to kind of funnel that down into concise answers for me, I believe it or not, as much as I can be a ham on stage and I'm very extroverted, I really don't like watching myself on video at all. And so it was getting over the hurdle of, I knew if we wanted to do this, I didn't want to make it an audio only podcast, because I'm a fan of so many video interviews and podcasts on YouTube.
For
so
sure.
That's Hot Ones is one of my favorites. Nardwar, classic. You know, classic. Again, the doing your homework thing with both of those guys. They're just, I think they're some of the greatest interviewers of all time, even if Nardwar is, you know, playing that character as he is. You know, it's still, you know, it's, you know, I think what they did to the medium is great. So yeah. I didn't want to just do an audio podcast. So it was getting over that hurdle of having to watch myself and take notes as the podcast is going on, and knowing that I would just hate the first, like, 15 episodes no matter what, just because I didn't like watching myself or hearing my own voice. So,
were you nervous when you did your first show?
Yeah, not necessarily nervous, because we had a friend of mine named Michael Sterto on, who was a really nice guy, and he's played guitar with Lou Gramm of Foreigner, and now he's out playing with Slaughter, and then he's doing dates with the Guest too as well. So hired gun session guitarist kind of guy. Really nice dude, and I've known him for a while, and he's really open and down to earth. So I booked the first couple guests, few guests, in keeping that in mind, because I wanted to have friends and people that I was comfortable with, so that would be easier to kind of break the ice and not be like so awkward and uncomfortable on camera. Beyond that, I'd say the biggest things have been the tech, which without Max Taylor, our engineer, I think we would be totally lost, both of us trying to get this together. And Max was gracious enough to allow us to film in his studio, which is where we are right now. And he puts out like at least one or two fires, it seems like, before each episode, even if it's just, oh, what's that noise or what's that buzz? And he can, you know, just fix it, you know, or...
Don't you love people that like have their act together that you're working with? It's like, man, I can't get enough people in my life always that are always like that, because it's the best. It's just the absolute best.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And that's been a huge component of it. And also, the three of us have known each other for a while, so it just adds to that chemistry in the room, I think. And, you know, we're all making each other laugh, or, you know, they're both, you know, I think ripping on me at, you know, my expense.
Happens a lot.
Yeah, but we're all laughing about it, you know. It's just, it's either, you know, one person is usually the butt of the joke at any given time. And we're all fairly sarcastic, too, so that also adds into that chemistry mix.
All three of you are such talented cats in different facets. How does that kind of complement all of it together? Because it is kind of a... You know, most people don't realize, like, whenever you do a podcast or a show or an interview, it's not just one person doing all the work. It's always, like, everything is the sum of its parts, you know? It's like,
yes.
So tell me how it works where, you know, it flows the best, or how it flows the best with the three of you.
I would say, as far as the interview portion of it, you mean as far as the flow, you mean the actual, like, the episode with what people are seeing or the conversation?
Either or, because even as the show is happening, like you said, Max is behind the scenes making sure it's all sounding good or everything's, like, you know, working the way it should. Like, how does your team flow kind of operate when it's functioning the best? Or, you know, when do you kind of feel like, is it like after the show you're, like, relieved that it all was smooth? Or is it like you kind of have, like... You know, your system down as to how things are going to move.
After shows.
Yeah. Well, when you said, oh, it's cool that you turned this into a, you know, sort of a gig or an activity, it was like, yeah, but it was pretty much like there was the before, what we had to do, or not had to, but it was the what we came to do, which was talk to this guest. And then the after show was pretty much just sort of a venting / therapy session for each other, where it was pretty much like, what's going on with you? Oh, man. And then pretty much some of the most interesting stuff has happened when the camera and the recording gear is off and we're just kind of like going off and just riffing. And it's like, man, I don't know if we want that out there, but it's just, you know, it's interesting how that's
still
worked.
Feels like I still feel like I want those little tidbits somewhere just separate. Like,
yeah,
know, Like, we should want a little salty version of the podcast.
Yeah, we should make a dysfunctional Patreon page. Hey, for $5
outtakes of like, this is all right wrong.
For $5 a month, you can hear us unravel for an additional 30 minutes.
Unravel. Holy shit.
No, I think as far as the flow goes, it's I don't know. The reason why I wanted Davey is that, like, as much as we're alike, we're very much different people in a lot of ways. We'll hit and we'll be on the same wavelength, but then at some points we'll be on, like, total opposite sides of the spectrum of whether we're talking about a topic or, even with talking to a guest, even if it's relatable, he'll come up with questions on the spot that I didn't even think of. And sometimes I'm trying to go for more of the broader, even if you're not into music or necessarily what this person's into, you'll be able to follow along. Davey will ask, like, more of a specific, nuanced question, I feel like, or come up with something completely left of center that I go, oh, wow, I never thought to ask that. Like, and I like having that perspective on the show. I think it just makes for a more interesting dynamic. And then also, too, there was one point where we were talking with a guest, and I forget what we were talking about, but you just totally, like, disagreed with something that the guest said. Like, oh, no, I don't feel that way at all. And I like it because he wasn't being rude or disrespectful. He just wasn't. He was like, oh, this is how I feel about that. And I'm like, okay, I like that dynamic to where we can have, you know, discourse on things, and it doesn't have to be a yes-and interview the whole time, where sometimes there might be times where we're actually having more of a discussion with the guest, and we might see things a little bit differently, and it makes for a more interesting conversation. So, and then Max will usually provide notes after the fact, and he'll go, hey, this is something that I noticed. And so
he's our coach.
Yeah, he's
I love that.
Yeah,
he's a silent partner. And when he's not so silent, that's when he's deadly, man.
Yeah. Nice. He'll be like, you know, you guys talked about that for 20 minutes, right? That was a lot of the earlier episodes. And I was like, oh, I didn't even think about that. He's like, yeah, it wasn't bad, but, you know, you might want to focus, you might want to think about this. Or, hey, you know, when you were talking about this, you might want to present it this way. And so, not like you have to do this, but just pointers on, hey, just as an objective party, because he's, you know, after the troubleshooting, you know, may or may not have come up, or even just the setting everything up and once it's rolling, he's just watching the episode like everybody else is.
Right.
So he can kind of see it from that, I guess, fan or viewer perspective on, I can kind of tell when Max is, you know, a little bit less interested, because there's times where he's on, you know.
How deep is he in his phone?
Yeah.
He'll keep checking the levels.
Is he on the phone right now, or is he listening?
I'm not playing video games right now.
I'm
not on this one.
Yeah, well, because the way we have it set up right now, Max would be in the shot, so I think he's taking care of some business in the other room he's got to do.
Yeah.
But normally he'd have his feet up on the desk, and he's watching the episode. And then sometimes when I see the phone come out and it's like, and he puts it away real quick, I'm okay. Other times if he's on the phone and he's on there for longer, I go, oh no, maybe I'm being a little bit boring. Maybe I should change up maybe I should just switch gears or switch topics.
You know, it's so funny. I remember there was one gig I played in San Francisco. And, you know, San Francisco is like hippie central, very, very lax. And I remember the sound guy set us up and we started playing and he left the room. He just like, the first song is grooving, you know? He just like, everything's working. I'm going to go out and probably smoke, you know? So he went outside and like, second song, somebody needed something. I think my saxophone player was like, hey man, can you get more sax in the monitor? And, you know, the lights are dark. And I'm like, hey man, is the sound guy there? Can we get some more sax in the monitor? And just crickets. It was just like, oh man, we must have bored him out of the space. So we just like had nothing to do except make jokes about how not entertaining we were. That the sound guy was like leaving, and then he comes back in like three songs later, like nothing was wrong. Like he just kind of like slipped back in, like nobody knew he was gone, and we just pretended we were like laughing on stage, like pretending. So it's like that, you know, when you see Max and he's paying attention, you're doing the right thing, or something's deadly wrong.
Right, yeah. Right. Well, and that's...
It's been both.
Oh, yeah, it's been both, for sure. Oh, man, that's one of those things, like, you know, and I know that, like, Max is not one of those set-it-and-forget-it engineers, just to go on a quick tech tangent. When I was doing sound, which I've sort of transitioned into more of the backline guitar teching, like, taking care of artists world, But, you know, as far as doing sound for a band, especially if you're the club sound guy, you never set it and forget it, ever. Even right. if you've got it dialed in and you're just making adjustments.
Well, I'm that's because you have work ethic.
Well, it's I don't know, man. I've always just felt like there's so many people that want to do this and I could easily be replaced. Or also the reason why I've gotten gigs is because people have complimented on that you don't sit on your phone or you're paying attention. And it's like, you know, sometimes that carries you more than your actual knowledge and experience. If you're willing to learn and you're there and you have the work ethic, you might end up getting the gig because they'll teach you how to do it and they know that you're going to show up and be responsible. That's happened to me, you know, a couple times. And it's, you know, I don't know. There's something to be said for that, I think. And I notice that, especially when I'm on the road playing and not working. I'm, you know, they don't know that I, you know, am touring or, you know, I'm like a tech guy. So I just go in and I'm a chameleon. It's like, I want to see how you treat me when you think I don't know anything. And it's kind of interesting to see how you get treated. It's almost like undercover boss in a way. You're just going in, you know, and you're just kind of like, yeah, I want to know how you're going to treat me if you think I don't know jack shit about this. Oh, sorry. Can I cuss on here?
Oh, you can. You can. Totally.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. So it's like,
I like that I already cussed. I like that I already cussed like my 15 minutes ago, but you asked me politely. I'm like, that's a guy who cares. I like it.
Yeah, no,
we swear incessantly some episodes.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
We like to check in.
Yeah, depending on the guest, especially when it's somebody I've known for a while, I just kind of tend to revert to, like, sailor mouth. So it's, yes, you know, it comes out. It comes out. Yeah. But, yeah, no, it's, I think, getting back to the podcast dynamic of it, I think it's, I think it shows in that, like, we're both musicians and we both, you know, we're both equally curious, I think. I think that's fair to say.
I think that's definitely part of the charter for sure.
Yeah.
I think when it comes to my definition of the flow, it's like it comes from the musical background in the sense of like improvising over a jam sort of thing.
Yeah.
As we did one episode that was like a performance of what the elements were, and we said, what if we did this? We tried those things. We moved areas of the show around. We decided intros and outros are meaningful. So we tried adding that.
Yeah.
So that's where the form fell into the show. And that was an easier part. I think in general, one of the easiest. I think for me, a challenge was like settling into roles and filling the space that is needing to be occupied in the production of the podcast. From specific things, be a tech things like, you know, we try to both book guests, but he's way better at it. And Max is doing the tech stuff. And he comes on for, you know, every couple of episodes he's on camera, but not all the time. So it's a matter of balancing out those things. And then, like, you know, themes and questions and stuff. And the fact that Jesse is a researcher. And it's like, I do the research. Like, I research most people. But either way, I don't want to, like, form the questions. I'd rather just improvise, especially off of a response that they give. Because usually people's responses tell me a little bit about their process that makes me go, here's my secondary, like, my response to that. So that's how I think we fell into, like, the rhythm that we got. And it works. I like the way it makes our guests feel. So I think we're onto something with that.
Yeah. Just to add to that, too, you know, it's funny because when you first learn how to play, you can be really wanting to sound like your influences, I think, you know, as far as, and that's sort of your voice. And I realize that when I do interviews for my column in the paper, that's either read online or, you know, whoever's actually reading the printed copy, you know, in town. So between those, you're getting my written voice, but you're not getting my actual voice, if that makes sense. And the podcast has a whole another element with tone of voice and how you're coming across.
Well, that all depends.
Like
now, if I read your article, I will hear your voice reading the article. So
that's
always true.
Well,
it reads like how he talks.
Well, that's
it does.
Yeah. Well, that's true, but not everybody is aware of that. So there's people that have met me that go, "Oh yeah, I read your column," but they've never met me before, just locally in the community. So, or people that you know, if I send it to them, they'll probably read the article in my voice. But for the podcast, you're definitely hearing it in my voice. So you can hear on the first few episodes, I was coming at it more like a prepared interviewer, and that's not all of my influence, and that's not what I wanted to come across in the show. I wanted to be prepared in the sense of, like, learning the material for a gig, where I want to know the form, and I want to know what the chord changes are, and I want to know what the melody is, and I want to know where the hits are. So that's me planning things out ahead of time to where in the moment I don't have to think about that, and then I can just have a, I guess I'll put in quotes, natural conversation, because it is, but I already have kind of a map.
To correct you, it was air quotes.
Yeah, fair enough, which is like arguably the most pretentious thing you could do, so I think, I don't know why I just did that, but it is, I mean, it's a natural conversation in that I'm not trying to have anything contrived, but I also want to have sort of a set list, I guess, keeping with the music metaphors of, right. I know I'm going to hit these beats, but if something comes up in the moment.
Are we doing music metaphors? Is that what
this I love
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Something like
wow.
that.
You didn't get the memo?
Thanks,
yeah. Well,
thanks so much.
Yeah. Well, it's like, I don't want it to be note for note. We do exactly what I planned out. I want it to be like 60% prepared and then like 40% improvised.
He's a Brian Wilson, not a Phil Spector.
Okay, I like it. Yeah. I got a two-part question for you guys. So how do you feel, because you're changing hats, you know, with doing this. And tell me what that process was like, just, you know, going from musician to, like, you know, you're a talk show host, basically, you know. And why do you think, the second part of that question is, why do you think it's important for musicians to kind of take this new role on, because I think it's fantastic. And I think more musicians need to do stuff like this, because I think the questions that musicians ask other musicians are more of what people want to hear than a non-artist asking an artist, for example.
Sure. I think that's a good point. I'd be curious how you feel about this, because I've been kind of juggling different things for a while, but I don't know, for you, is this like a huge leap? Or
I don't know if I you know, again, I think the hardest part was, like, I guess I came into it thinking that it was going to be much like playing in a band, but our personas, though we're the exact same people and our friendship dynamic doesn't change at all, this fits differently than when we play in a band together, for sure.
Definitely.
You know what I mean? So yeah. Understanding just that it's a different organism, though it's an artistic venture, is how we approach it. I think that's just been the thing of, like, accepting that it's different and then embracing that difference.
Yeah.
And, like, I always told him I felt like it was relating to, like, you know, growing up I did a lot of drama training and stuff. So to me, a lot of these ideas feel like there's almost a nostalgia vibe in that, like, oh, when you're starting off with this is, like, here's how we could do this beat and this is how it becomes, like, a chunk of, like, things. But then we realized that was way too structured.
Yeah.
And that's when we just decided to abandon that and kind of be like, we will prepare, but we won't put things in order so that it sets up so it feels like a bit that we're going to hit at a time part.
Yeah.
And we made it much more like, well, we improvise when we play together. One of our biggest things was him and his drummer from his band, Rogue. We would go improvise live shows and just play whatever came to mind.
That's
because
right.
We knew it
yeah.
would scare the shit out of people.
Yeah.
I keep hesitating about cursing, which is not me.
Yeah. Yeah, I wanted a band I didn't have to worry about promoting that had no social media page, and we would just play at a local dive bar in town, and the goal was to have nobody show up. And it was the exact opposite. And we came up with a band name, and I'm friends with a local promoter in town. Shout out to Burger Wolf in the Antelope Valley. And I hit him up. I was like, hey, can we play a Thursday night at the Britisher, which is like a local dive bar where people will play next to dart machines in kind of the corner, basically. And so, like, well, it's true. It's like we have Transplants Brewing now, which has like a stage and a full PA, and then we have the Britisher, which is sort of like you can play acoustic there, like punk bands play there. It's like a exciting, like, it's like a dive bar. It's playing right. a dive bar, so it's got the fun of that. And yeah, we did a few gigs where I was like, hey, I don't want to have to worry about promoting this, and this isn't a real show, and I want to have no planned material. Let's just play for 30 minutes and see what happens. And on a Thursday night when you show up and there's, like, a couple cars in the parking lot, it was the only time I've ever been like, yes, this is exactly what I wanted.
Right.
I wanted three people at the bar just sipping beer and watching us, and a couple people at the pool tables just, you know, playing and doing our thing. Or we could just cut loose and not have to worry about, like, oh, man, people came out, you know, on a Saturday night to see this and, you know, they, you know, whatever, you know. And so we kind of had that dynamic going into it mm-hmm. with that history. But it is different when you're playing off of conversation and not necessarily musical ideas. And I almost feel like it's a little bit harder sometimes with the conversation than the musical part of it. Because the conversation is literally just us. And then if we're jamming in a musical situation, all else fails, you could just revert to something that works, and it, you can kind of use that as a reset point. And then if the conversation goes into a weird juncture, then it's kind of harder to dig yourself out, you know. It's harder to dig yourself out of a verbal hole than a musical hole, I think.
Mm, you're talking holes again.
Yeah.
30 minutes into every show.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh, wait.
Now it's time for whole metaphors.
Yeah.
Starring
Jay.
Yeah. I think there's something to that.
Yeah.
And you guys do the show every day or every week?
Well, so usually it would
weekly?
Be... Yeah, weekly. It's been weird for the last couple months with, you know, I was on the road for a month, and then when I got off the road...
on the road with Lita Ford, right?
Yeah. So that was from about June 30th to about July 31st with a few off days in there where we were home. And so we were able to film some when I was at home then, but then when I got back after that, work just got insane with other bands that I work for, and then also just local, like, stagehand gigs, and then Davey has his own schedule. And so for the last month, we've been on a little bit of a hiatus, but I think we've got time now over the next couple months, and so we're going to plan that. We're going to try to plan it out like your show, to where, you know, we booked this back in April. I checked my text. It was like the end of April. And I went, you know what? We're going to have to do this because we both want to keep doing the podcast. And, you know, now it's like, along with I've been editing together some compilation videos and just cutting up different clips from the podcast and having that content. I want to also just start booking things out in advance. And so once we kick things up, I think, in the next, you know, couple weeks with this, then we'll be back and have content flowing and things like that. And that way, if we're both busy, then, you know, we have stuff banked up. And so now that things have been kicking up again, it's been a little bit of an adjustment. But I have guests in the works, and I'm really excited to be bringing them on the show and, you know, getting back to doing what we're doing. So,
I'll tell you from experience, I feel like a lot of it is just about being consistent.
Yeah.
Like showing up every week and making sure it's a thing. And you'll start like I used to, when we started the show, and I say we, cause I used to have a co-host, Eddie Pence. He still kind of comes on every now and then, but we used to do 4 guests in 1 2-hour window. And it was like, it was a lot. We were doing it in downtown LA, and it was like fast paced, people coming in and out. It was just like, there was like parties in the green room, you know. It was just, it was a lot of energy. It was like too much, you know. And then we moved to LA Talk Radio, and it was like a much cooler pace, because we were going to do a 1-hour show, have one guest, and really do like this broad thing. And I think that changing that format gave us like more of a focus on the guest. And the reason I say that and bring that up is, what I never thought this show would be for me was a way to completely network. Cause like now it's like, you know, I just was texting via Instagram the creator of Entourage, Doug Ellen, and he's going to be a guest on the show. And it's like awesome. The fact that they can be, you know, it can be done via Zoom. You know, that it's like this remote thing that nobody has to come to a studio, even though we have a studio. I haven't even been to the new studio yet, but it's because of that consistency of, this is the show every week. This is my windows to book people. This is what it is. It becomes a thing that you start broadening your you know, Rolodex, you know, to bring the old term, just to see how the show can grow. And, you know, I never thought that this show would be that. I just wanted to basically showcase my friends and just say, I've got all these talented people. Let me just keep bringing them in. And it's turned into this wide net that the show has now become a vehicle for me to kind of like bring more of these people together for collaborations or just like heroes I've wanted to meet. So the reason I wanted you guys on this show, Your podcast definitely deserves a showcase. It just, you have such great in-depth questions. You guys have such a great vibe together. You can tell you guys have been friends for a long time. You can tell you know what you're talking about in the industry. And you ask thought-provoking questions, but it also has like a very casual, you know, Letterman kind of vibe where you can horse around and talk about the business And, you know, I find it refreshing to hear those narratives now because there's so much fake stuff. I mean, every network has some bullshit show. It doesn't matter if it's a talk show or a game show or whatever, where it's just silly fluff. And I think you guys all search for entertainment in the same way that any artist searches for it. You want entertainment that inspires you. You want stuff that, you know, is thought-provoking. I watch you. When you post videos on Facebook, I watch them. Because it's I want to see what you guys are doing because it's interesting to me. So that's why I think it's, like, so important that you guys keep that, you know, consistency because you guys are doing a great thing. And I hope more guests want to, you know, reach out to you guys to be on show for that reason because that's why I think we're all doing it, is just to find some connection in maybe all of our stories on some level, right?
Yeah. I think so. And speaking of connection, I think it ties into something that you mentioned earlier. For me, all of these things are part of one entity. So when I get better at being a conversationalist, I get better at being a musician because it's the same thing at the end of the day. So the tone of thinking about my tone of voice and how I say something, and same thing with writing, trying to edit down what I thought would take 1,600 words to say into 800 has taught me to go, okay, well, what's the clutter in these sentences? Like, how can you trim the fat to say the same thing in 5 words that you could say in 15 or 16 words, you know? And it's the same thing as a musician. You know, I see these other professional musicians and how they work, and it's, okay, this is how they're playing and this is how they're conducting themselves on stage. And it's the same thing with doing the podcast. To me, it's all of the, like, everything I'm doing is an extension of just being a musician, and that's the core of who I am. So when I'm talking, it doesn't matter if I'm necessarily the most skilled interviewer or anything else, because I'm like, okay, well, I just have to be the best version of me that I possibly can. And so,
you're engaging. That's the point. Is with any art, you're trying to dig deeper, you know?
Yeah, and this whole journey that I've been on for me has been this journey of digging deeper. Whereas before, I'm like, oh, I don't want to look at myself. You know, I'm not. Basically, it would have been a whole, and you know, this is part of the after show talk. Mm-hmm. A whole bunch of like getting over all of my negative self talk of, oh, I don't think I can do that. And it's weird because I've probably only really built confidence in what I've been doing in the last like 4 years, 5 years, and a steady incline of that to where it's like, oh, I don't know if I could ever do this. And now
he's been a professional for 10. That's what he's
right. Doing. Well, yeah. It's, you know, you might have an outward appearance of like, hey, you know, think I've got this all handled, but on the inside you're freaking out and going, oh, I hope they don't find out. You know, I hope the music police don't come in and
but is
oh, wait, no,
you know the fuckers.
Yeah.
That's every artist, man. That's every artist.
Right. And so it's only been within the last 4 or 5 years where I've gotten confidence and had experiences where people like yourself and other guests too, like it doesn't matter if they're friends of mine or not, like genuinely compliment how we've done stuff or played gigs where people were genuinely impressed with my band and how we played. All of those things add into this all of it adds into this big wealth of experience that I'm pulling from in any situation, and just kind of breaking down the barriers of these are separate activities. They're really, to me, they're all the same, and I need to prepare for them the same. And really, how they function is different, but ultimately you're going for the same sort of end goal. And so, and I look for that in people's stories too. We're both interview junkies, and we're both like not just watching interviews for entertainment, but I'm also watching interviews for artists talking about like inside information.
All I want is their process, you know, being an admirer.
But that's what all this does. It strengthens all of our processes, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly. I want to be the channel for somebody was looking for information. Like one of my favorite podcasts we did, there's been a few that have been kind of in my top, you know, not 5, but, you know, just top lists of like, I really like the way these turned out. There was great information, really funny, really informative, whatever it was. Episode 5 we did with Tobias from Softkill. Mm-hmm. So one of my buddies is Tobias Grave from Softkill, is the lead singer, guitarist from that band. They're a Portland-based band.
Wow.
And they're like, especially in the last couple of years, have really blown up and getting, like, song placements and different things. Like, I think they just got a song on Fortnite not too long ago.
That's awesome.
They're opening up for bigger bands, bigger festivals, things like that. And I just asked. I said, hey, you know, would you be down to do the podcast? Just threw it out on a whim. Got back to me right away, said yes. And that's another thing. All the guests I've reached out to have either said yes or they said, I'll do it when I have something new coming out that I want to promote or talk about. And nobody said outright no to it. So that's been cool so far.
That's true.
But he had such an insight into the music business and about record contracts and basically was saying that, you know, you're better off doing this on your own and selling 10,000 copies and owning 100%. Instead of selling 100,000, a million copies and only getting a fraction of percentage. And he has a lot of experience in the business as well. And I've had these conversations with him at his house, you know, with his wife or just with him. And I was like, we need to bring this conversation to the podcast. And he agreed to do it. And it was just, I feel like, one of the most informative episodes we've done so far. And I think last time I checked, it was like our highest viewed so far. It's like, if it hasn't hit 1,000 yet, it's like pretty close. And
well, what's amazing is like most people don't really understand how the industry works. So when you have that kind of guest that's like, let me show you exactly how it works, that is thought provoking. Just because even if you're not a musician, it's like, whoa, this is how this works behind the curtain, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also it's just, I love his take on just music and, you know, his sort of outlook on all that. So that was entertaining too. Like
an original man.
Yeah, and like, you know, he's turned me on to some interesting stuff I had never heard before, and we got into that. We talked a little bit about, you know, different stuff. And also just there was a few really funny quotes in there because their band is sort of, they get compared to the Cure and Joy Division a lot, but I think they more take after like the Stone Roses and like Asylum Party and bands like that. So like that 80s sort of goth new wave, like English
dark
band.
Wave.
Yeah, Harry, dark wave. New wave.
Manchester.
Yeah, like, yeah. And they're putting their spin on it in a modern way. So they get compared to those bands. And I think he said, one time I tweeted, you know, hey man, I get it. We're the Insane Clown Posse of this genre, but hey, whoop, whoop. And I was like, this is gold. Yeah. This is gold. Yeah. You know, because I guess with the way they approach it and, like, the way they do merch and stuff, it's like, you know, I guess they more model it after, like, the hip-hop scene as opposed to what those bands would do. And so that was his comparison. And I'm like, that's a quote. Like, this is great. We've got a great soundbite right there. This is awesome.
Well, let me ask you this. What are you listening to or watching that is so thought-provoking or interesting or catching your attention, just to get, you know, a finger on the pulse as to what you guys are digesting or ingesting.
Ooh, and regurgitating.
And regurgitating. Yes.
All the time regurgitating.
Yeah.
I mean, I always love hearing what artists are digging into, you know, it fascinates me, to be honest, because, you know, I remember hearing, do you know Stephen Perkins, the drummer for
Jane's Addiction, right?
Mm-hmm. And
Porno for Pyros.
Yeah, that's right. And when I was working at Guitar Center, you know, and he had a mohawk, and you know, like they were like, somebody asked, like, what are you listening to right now? And he was like, Peter Gabriel Up, and that was what I had in my player at that time. I went and talked to him because of that response, and I never ever would have thought he was a Peter Gabriel fan or into that style of music at all. And that's when it changed for me that no matter what an artist looks like or is into or what music they play, it's finding out what things are inspiring them that it becomes some of the most fascinating as to why they are artists, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess I could go first if you don't mind.
Go, gentle gent.
Yeah. Well, as far as music goes, I had an epiphany on the 405, which I don't know if that's the best place to have one because you're probably going to run into the person in front of you. But yeah, right around I was listening to Deep Purple, and it was the Burn album, which I love Deep Purple, but that's an album I haven't dug into as much because it was always like just the early Ian Gillan era, you know, and then a couple of the later albums. But I was listening to that and going back over it because I hadn't heard it in a while. And then it hit me. I was like, I've listened to way too much classic stuff. I love the classic stuff. That's what's informed me. But I'm like, I need to listen to something more current right now. And that's just what I was feeling in the moment. So I went back and I heard a little bit of them last year during quarantine, but I listened to Death from Above 1979. That's
sure you did.
Yeah, that was one of my newer favorites. I really like them. Recently on the road, I listened to there's a band called The Internet.
Yeah, the Internet's been around for a minute.
Yeah, have they?
Yeah.
Let's see, like it shows eight, you what nine, I know. 10 years? Finger on the pulse. Yeah.
They're sick. They're sick, though.
Yeah, so that's been cool. I love Mono Neon. I love the stuff that he's putting out right now because it's just really weird and experimental and crazy. The Garden is really good. They've been around kind of for a while now, but I think I did sound for them at the old Lancaster Moose Lodge when I was still doing punk
that's
shows.
Right.
And they sold the place out, and I was like, one of the only times I've ever seen a band where I thought they're going somewhere, like, immediately, because, you know, 150 kids showed up out of nowhere, and I'd never heard of this band, and I went, oh, they're going places. And now they've been, like, opening up for Mac DeMarco, and I think now they're playing at, like, they're headlining the Fonda coming up soon, if they haven't done it already. So they're, like, weird, surfy, indie, punk, like, electronic noise avant-garde. You can't really put your
I love it
on,
already and that's
yeah,
awesome.
it's insane, and it's a little bit kind of atonal but also melodic at the same time. It's all over the place. I think they called their music Vada Vada. They gave it a genre because there wasn't a genre for it, so they're a little bit weird and insane. I like them. I literally just heard today Kamasi Washington did a version of Metallica's My Friend of Misery. I don't know when it came out, but I guess it was pretty recent. So that, I heard it, and it blew my mind just today.
He's brilliant. He's so great.
Yeah, and it was just, like, he had a female singer on it in the choir, like he usually does, and they took the lyrics and the melody, and they totally reworked it and made it, like, this jazzy, crazy thing. And I don't know what it was for, but I heard that and went, wow, because that just totally blew my mind. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, music-wise, that's what I'm digging on lately. What about you?
Not much.
Not much? All right. Fair enough.
No, I kid.
Yeah.
A lot of things lately. New things would definitely include Phoebe Bridgers' album last year. And definitely the new Hiatus Coyote album.
Yeah.
I've been a fan of theirs since
2020. I don't know them.
You don't know Hiatus Coyote?
Oh, dude.
Oh, broski woski. Oh, man.
That's awesome. This is why I asked the questions.
I basically say, like, they're from Australia. They're this really amazing four-piece band, like neo-soul, jazz, everywhere else on the map you can fit.
Yeah, it's like, it sounds like Snarky Puppy's hip cousin come over for dinner.
Yeah, like their their little stoner cousin that's in college.
Yeah, yeah, that's
if
a great
if you fuck with Snarky Puppy, you'll like them. Definitely, I stick with lots of old shit, though, most of the time. I practice Jamerson bass lines every day.
That's so awesome.
I'd be listening to, like, you know, like Bernadette and stuff. Yeah. All the Four Tops and all the Temptations and Stevie Wonder stuff every day. And Charlie Parker every day. I've been listening to a lot of country because I got a country band that's playing like crazy. We do originals and stuff, too. He's covered for me a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Quite well, I should say.
Oh, thank you.
And so now I'm moving over from the bass player to lead guitar. So now I'm listening to the same songs but learning that there's guitar parts in them. So
right.
I've been listening to a shitload of music lately, but the first two ones are, like, the things I've been doing to, like, vibe out. Because sometimes, I mean, I will practice for, like, 5 hours at a time when I can make that time, which is a couple days a week.
Man, I love that. You practice 5 hours a day?
I'm fucking obsessive, bro. I'm, like, super obsessive.
Like, I do that. I'll do that, like, I'll do 3 hours in the middle of the night, maybe once every 4 or 5 days. That's when I practice the best. Like 3 to 6 in the morning, that's when I'll practice. I'm like, so,
really?
Because, like, I have nobody's interrupting me. That's what I like about it. Yeah, and it's everybody's asleep. Even my Otis bulldog is asleep. And, and I could just focus, you know, because otherwise it's like, there's just so much stuff going on all the time that, you know, it's even making my brain, you know, not slow down. So, man, that's amazing that you are that focused, because I always envy that. That's how I want to practice, 5 hours a day every day, but I don't do that. I wish I could, but I don't.
You know, it just feels like I'm overcoming, like, like a deficit or something. It definitely springs from like the things you would label as like your negative, your self-image that you're trying to reduce. Like, yeah.
Right.
His thing is seeing himself on camera. I think I look amazing. But my thing is that I still feel like the underdog.
You both look amazing.
Thank you. Hair flip. We got some Fabios up in here. You know? But I grew up with a family of musicians, and I was always the youngest in the scene up here. So I was always welcome, but I always felt like I had to, like, if I don't keep at it, like, I still have this, carry the ship on my shoulder of, like, I still need to keep at it. Like, getting older makes me think that now, like, you got time to fuck around and get lazy. Some of the cats around town might be doing it. It's like, God bless them. They got their own thing. But I'm like, I can't see myself like that. So I have to do it as much as I can. So I go right up until about 10, 11 o'clock, then I pass out with the guitar. I can't do
that middle of
the night stuff, bro.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I've been listening to a ton of Stones, obviously, because Charlie Watts died.
Same.
And it's been weird because I've been actually listening to a lot of the drum parts. Like, not that I didn't notice them before, but knowing that he's gone, and I was lucky to see the Stones 3 times. Yeah. But knowing that he's gone, it's really made me focus on how great the drum parts are and how great the songs are and how great it was that he was in a band for 50 plus years and the band is still moving forward. It's like, I just have a lot of respect for, you know, because I've also lost people, and that's not easy to kind of like, and they've been touring incessantly every year they tour, you know, so, mm-hmm. or every couple of years, you know, if they're not making a record. So, you know, I've been listening to a lot of Stones. I've been watching. I just watched this weird movie about Why Do Fools Fall in Love, about the singer that wrote that song. And this kid wrote this. Frankie Lyman. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And he wrote that song at 13 years old and got signed and went through all these drugs. And so, like, I mean, that movie actually hurt. I physically felt hurt. That kid went through so much, and that story, not many people know that story, and yet it's such a tremendous it's like a regurgitating story of what happens in the music industry, you know? So, but you know what? Those kind of stories kind of inspire me to keep working and to keep engaging other artists and checking in on them just to, you know, do shows like we have, you know?
Both
You know, so I love that you guys are just like active in your communities, active in the industry, active, you know, on the music format, you know, page. And I just want to see more of you guys doing more of this stuff, man. This is what it's all about, bro.
thank you so much. I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head for that. For us, I think it's community-based, but also I think in music it should be like a big hangout. And, you know, I don't say party in the sense of, like, getting loaded, but I mean, like, it should be like showing up to a big hang with your friends as much as possible. Because there's so many situations where it's not that, and, you know, whenever it can be that way, and if you can cultivate that, and everybody's kind of – nobody has to be the same. It's not like, you know,
we're not big fans of areas where there's like a lot of ego, like kind of filling up the room and like changing the quality of the air, which can happen working in the industry, you know, in the levels we do. So I don't know if maybe it was intentional, but I think it was partly, it was like, we want to make this boundaried space where it's like, we're going to make sure we keep it our way. Like, the way we would want to be treated is the way it's going to go in here.
Right.
So it's like, you know, do what you want, but you only got invited here because we know that you're cool people anyway.
Right.
You know what I mean? So.
Right. And
where can people find Sonic City Council? Like, you guys have a website? Are you on iTunes, Stitcher? Where can people find Sonic City Council?
You can find us on Spotify. We've got audio podcasts on there. The YouTube is where you can get the video podcasts. Mm-hmm. I think we're on Google Podcasts as well, and Podbean.
We're on the Podbean. We're on the Apple Musax. We're on the Amazon Musax.
Yeah.
We're on basically, if it streams or it creams, we're there with Sonic City Council right now.
There's a shirt right there.
Yeah.
Well, thank you guys for being wonderful guests on Wake Up Hollywood. You know, I'd love to have you guys back and I will definitely book you guys again. It'll probably be 3 or 4 months out in advance as usual, but I appreciate you guys being guests, and let's keep in contact. Let's collaborate on some music. Let's make some more things happen. How does that sound?
I love it.
110%.
I ten.
Yeah, baby.
Well, on behalf of Sam, myself, Jesse, and David, we'll see you guys here next week. Thanks for tuning in to Wake Up Hollywood, and take care of each other. Be good. Be good. All right, guys. Be good. Bye for now, all right?
All right, peace out, brother.
Goodbye, everybody. Goodbye. Goodbye.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.